Siren FM. And now on this last Midweek Drive morning edition for June 2017, it's time for Tessa Snott for the weather for Lincoln from Glinton.
Okay, with a high of 15 centigrade and a low of 14 centigrade, it's going to be rather cloudy, feeling cold and damp throughout the day.
Glinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snott taking Midweek Drivette duties to a whole new level.
Hurrah, that's what we like here. Rather cloudy, cold and damp throughout the day. It's like the Lincolnshire show never happened, really. But still, it did. And you were there last week, and you can see the photographs on social media. Just go to facebook.com/Southside Broadcasting and a whole heap of other goodies. Did you enjoy the experience of the 133rd Lincolnshire show, Tessa?
Oh, yes, I did. I can't believe it's 133 years since it first began.
And you've only managed to clock up 110 of those, so it's very good.
You know. I know. And hopefully next year. Hopefully.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I missed out on the giant tortoises again.
Oh, well, you see, that's why you need to come to Countryside Links, you know, the Easter special. You need to sort that, as opposed to going and partying, celebrating birthdays and such like, you need to sort of sort them to get the priority right. Get the family to celebrate the Easter time. Of course, it shifts around every year, Easter, so we'll have to sort of schedule that.
Definitely.
In. And, of course, the sort of sad news is you can't join us for the next biggie, the next major event that's actually happening between the 11th and the 13th of July. That's the Great Yorkshire Show. Well, we'll be heading there for final day.
That is another one I'd love to go and see, but unfortunately it just falls at the wrong time for me again this year. But I'm sure it'll be great, and I can listen to the podcast.
Well, there is
and
that.
I can see the photos. So.
Exactly. So it's a sort of virtual sense. But at the end of the day, the huge and ever-growing number of Sound and Country Vision fans who desperately sort of want to touch base with your good self, Tessa, they'll say, oh, Tessa's not here. Let's face it, you know, Sound and Country Vision is more than just the music. It's the news. It's a whole range of things from that point of view. It's all things to do with countryside material. And the next edition, in case you're wondering where we're going with this, for Volume 10 of Sound and Country Vision, if you haven't already had to listen to the podcast, it is actually online. We'll be going out a week today. It'll be the first Thursday in July, just after 7 o'clock. That's PM, in case you're wondering, GMT. And you can listen to it live on Siren 107.3 FM, or just Siren FM Lincoln's very own community radio station, and sirenonline.co.uk. What exciting things can the listener actually encounter from Volume 10? I mean, what sort of wonderful sort of folk have you actually got in there?
Well, we've got a whole range of guests on the show, actually. Mm-hmm. It's jam-packed. So we've got Elle Bailey, wonderful bluesy singer.
She was on the Midweek Drive last night, you know. She was doing her stuff on the Midweek Drive, and we had two Elle Bailey songs, and just tremendous. She kind of offset the sheer excitement that was provided by the Rodent. The Rodent and Vince Ripper, who I believe actually were the first ever correspondents who'd actually sort of connected with the Midweek Drive from a hearse, which is nice. Podcast hasn't gone up yet, but you know, if you ever sort of wish to interview people in Blackpool in a hearse, then Vince Ripper and the Rodent, they're the people to actually go to. Anyway, Elle Bailey is on the show. Leany Jane, I believe, is co-presenting, co-hosting, so that's very good.
We'll be co-hosting, and we've got Wildwood Kin. They're a brilliant trio. They were chatting to us from Glastonbury, and then we've got Joe from Gladsville, who's from the number one acclaimed tribute band to the ABC's Nashville drama, and then Mel Austin, who's talking to us about the CMA festival. So.
And Elle Bailey was also in Glastonbury as well, so she was performing, so that was all good stuff there.
She was as well, yeah.
I mentioned her several times because she will be co-hosting Sound and Country Vision again. That's all good, so very exciting times for that. Anyway.
Yeah, that is very exciting.
Back to that question I put before we got into scrambled eggs and such like before the news. Can you boil an egg? Actually, you're probably a bit too young for this, because a recent survey suggested that 34%, little over a third of the population of 25 to 34 year olds in the United Kingdom have admitted they cannot manage to boil an egg.
Even at university, maybe scrambled is the easier and quicker way for students to just have on toast. I don't tend to boil an egg very often. I think I may have done it once. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, was it successful when you actually successfully took the egg out after 4 minutes? Did you sort of think, yeah, that's it, this is the right one? Did you go for a runny egg? Did you go for eggy soldiers?
My mum's always made me eggy soldiers. It was a while ago, and I should think I had my mum's assistance. I was probably a lot younger. As I say, I've not done one in ages. So I can't even remember what the outcome was.
All right.
Maybe that just proves that the statistics are quite true.
Can't remember what the outcome was. I shall put that down for a quote later on the production. You might like to listen to the response, which is always good. Aaliyah Hercules, that's Aaliyah, chef, recipe writer and food stylist, who honed her cooking skills in the fiery kitchens of Ottolenghi and has worked as a freelance recipe developer for a variety of brands, and Nikki Kirbishley, who is a passionate cook, blogger and the winner of the 2016 Next Cookaholic competition. That's from the NEFF scenario of wonderment from that point of view, and this is the search for the next cookaholic. So you might like to put in for this whole thing. It's an innovative kitchen brand, NEFF. Research showed that 25% of us take pictures of our dishes and post them on social media when cooking for friends and family. Now, do you do that, Tessa?
I have also done that.
Oh no.
The big one is pancake day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take pictures of your pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
And pop them on in hashtag pancake day. Mm-hmm. I have done that. I don't do it often. There is Instagram accounts that's full of food. I'm not one of those.
You can't eat your mobile phone or mobile device, can you? And you don't want to eat it. You'll get all bits of metal in your teeth, and it's not going to be good at all.
That is true.
Interesting enough, if we're digging deeper into this survey, 40% of Londoners don't know how to cook dry pasta, and nearly a quarter of all women surveyed don't know how to make pancakes.
Really? That's interesting.
Clearly they should be accessing Holly McGrattan's video of same with the pancake making that she put together a few weeks ago. Holly, of course, now back in Brighton, probably doing all sorts of wonderful things. But there we are. Yeah. Anyway.
It's difficult to look up a recipe for pancakes these days.
Well, this is the whole thing. And apparently this is why this survey reveals that British folk are using social media channels to find inspiration and show off their cooking accomplishments. So social media apparently making us a nation of more adventurous cooks. So we'll be focusing on Aaliyah and Nikki Kirbishley in around about an hour's time or so from now when they'll be joining us. But before that, of course, we've also got Michaela Strachan. Now, Michaela...
Really well.
Yeah, well, let's see. Michaela...
I used to watch her on TV all the time.
Well, she's back with us on the Midweek Drive. You are now a fellow Midweek Drivette with Michaela. And she's primarily talking about cats and dogs. Because...
Oh.
Yes, he has got a thing there. Apparently, what do you prefer, Tessa? Are you a cat person? Are you a dog person? Do you say neither? I'm a hamster man. Person, human being.
Okay. I love all animals, and I don't like to favoritism. I don't like favoritism over them. But I've got to say, I edge over more towards the dogs than the cats. I have a dog and cat, but I do love my dogs.
So last week at the Lincolnshire show, despite your mum's clear affection for the pigs, you weren't sort of considering a little bit of, you know, sort of saying, I prefer to go for the pig, actually. That's very good.
Yeah.
No. Well, it would seem, in terms of the facts that come out from this piece that we'll be speaking about with respect to Michaela, that in terms of the actual dogs scenario, we have 46% of people prefer dogs compared to 30% who like cats better.
That seems strange, because you get the crazy cat ladies. You see all over social media.
The crazy cat ladies? Is that some sort of bands that go together in Nashville, etc.? The crazy cat ladies?
No, you get these people that are just obsessed with cats. Mm. Everything is cats in their life. And so you call them crazy cat ladies.
Ian Lennox isn't a crazy cat lady, he's a crazy cat man. He's got Ollie and Obo, you know? And let us not forget, of course, let's not forget Fuzz Aldrin and the delights of Phil and Lil, Lily Holloman and Phil Dearness. Yeah, exactly.
And Sam and David.
Well, precisely. But in terms of, I mean, again, we'll talk a bit more about that later. Favourite names for dogs are as follows. The top five names are Max, Jack, Poppy, Charlie and Alfie.
Okay. They're quite... I don't know how to put it. But See, I like names that are quite unique, maybe big and suit the actual animal.
Ah, yes.
They're quite normal English names,
exactly.
Really, aren't they?
And the top five names for cats: Poppy, Daisy, Molly, Smudge and Lucy.
Poppy's quite popular.
For both cats and dogs. Exactly. Anyway, more about that with Michaela just after Richard Fitzwilliams, in about sort of 15 minutes time. It's all very exciting. What's Richard going to be talking about? He's going to be talking about Royal Ascot. Last week, weather was a bit better, but he was on form for that. We've got Hamsters, the movie, and also The Graduate. Astonishingly, he's not talking about Transformers, which, as a guilty pleasure, didn't expect to enjoy it, really enjoyed it, would actually recommend it, find it had lots of LOL laugh out loud moments with Anthony Hopkins in particular, but there we are. So it goes. Tessa, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
I most certainly haven't, and the lineup for the show today sounds great, so hopefully lots of people are tuning in today.
Well, you can stay with us, of course, on sirenonline.co.uk and or the TuneIt mobile app and or the radio player app, and you can listen as well, and feel free to correspond or add any other questions as well from the whole system.
Definitely. So, I just want to quickly say,
yes,
before I go, I saw that, have we got Paul Nelson coming up?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, talking about the world. I've actually been to the World Travel Market, and it was a brilliant experience.
Excellent.
I'm going to listen in to that.
Well, I shall talk you through Paul Nelson. I'll make sure that Paul's a little pre-record, so we'll sort of just work our way through that process. So Sarah Bull is there, and Jenny Bond wraps up the programme. We might even be joined by John Wenham and, of course, Eva MacDonald. Mind you, having given the weather forecast, Tessa, that you shared with us, and pops her little head out of the window at the top of the hill, sees the high conditions of precipitation, you know, fretting about, because heaven only knows the hair might go all frizzy, etc. So who knows? But the good news is she's back to peak fitness, and I do actually have her goodie bag from last week's Lincolnshire show to present to her, if she actually can turn out, because obviously she was a bit poorly last week, but there we are. Life continues.
Well, wish her well for me.
We will. Would you like, in keeping with the weather, Beyond the Sun with the Nashville cast?
Yes, I would. Definitely.
Well, then we'll see you again next week, Tessa. Take care.
Yeah. Okay.
I wonder what it's like to live on cloud nine, where everything's fine all of the time. I wonder how it feels to be
The sun just goes into the background there, and it's probably the shock at realising that Richard Fitzwilliams is not, I repeat, going to be reviewing Transformers, which I have to say, one of the unexpected treats of the summer, really, particularly Sir Anthony Hopkins' performance. But there we are. He'll probably go down some line with Diane Keaton and Royal Ascot and various other bits and pieces, together with maybe even a kind of a reprise of Mrs. Robinson. I don't know. Richard Fitzwilliams, where are you going to take us? But not, I presume, to Transformers, nor indeed Salazar's Pirates of the Caribbean 5.
Well, in fact, firstly, Royal Ascot, which really was an extraordinary 5 days. Now, I say that particularly because the standard of fashion was amazingly high. Most members of the royal family appeared, and certainly the royal procession, which had been a regular since 1825, is always so wonderfully spectacular. But the heat, I have to say that it's very rare, if ever, in the, well, in fact, exceptional circumstances, I quote, for organizers to relax the strict dress rules for the first time in 306 years. That's since Queen Anne founded Royal Ascot in 1711. It was the heat, and it meant men were allowed to take...
Richard, are you saying that you went in Bermuda shorts and a T-shirt?
Indeed, I'm not. I went in the conventional Royal Enclosure morning dress, which the reasons for making it such a colourful... It's a fashion fest, of course, and it's got very, very, very exciting racing. The Gold Cup was particularly thrilling, and I have to say I won it. I mean, by about a neck in it. When there was a roar of the crowd in a really, really exciting race, that is where you want to be. If you want a picnic, that too is where you want to be. And if you want to see fabulous fashions, some of them are obviously much better than others, but out of the 5 days, four were an extremely high standard. Ascot 2 is really, really for you.
Well, there we are. Obviously, book it in for 51 weeks from now. I wonder if we can combine it with another state Queen's speech in terms of the opening of Parliament, which always
works. That was amazing, but it's happened. I think from memory there have been two occasions. One was in the 1970s, and I think the other was perhaps 2001 or thereabouts. The Queen will not miss Royal Ascot, nor did she, and as you know, she's, although the Royal Horses didn't do particularly well, she looked splendid. There's always a fun that you can have and betting on the Queen's hat. I mean, it...
Well, was it going to be a celebration of the European Union? We don't know. It's just...
Oh, well, that was rather fun. This was the hat, by the way, not, of course, which the Queen wore to Royal Ascot, but which the Queen opened Parliament in a scaled-down ceremony, which included this rather intriguing hat with the colours of the European flag. I have to say, I didn't pick that up instantly.
It was probably just something she slipped on at the last moment.
Well, no. I don't think it had any symbolism, but I think it was rather fun that people saw symbolism in it, as they do in every gesture that any public figure makes, of course, on the subject. But I'd rather thought that it was a sort of substitute, the nearest you get to a substitute crown with those parts in it, the gold glinting. But of course, if you look at the European flag, yes, you can have some fun. I mean, that's the point of it. It links with Ascot Week, because fashion means fun. It's fascinating to see these extraordinary picture hats and the saucers and flowers and the ensembles. I mean, so many of them are so gorgeous. It really, really was fantastic. And also, of course, when you've got tough regulations, because the idea of a fascinator, you stick a feather in your hat and pitch up, you won't be let in. If you have a strapless dress, you won't be let in.
This is one of the reasons why clearly I haven't made it the last couple of years, Richard.
Well, I mean, a bare midriff.
Exactly. Oh. You know, that and the fascinator, it's just never quite worked for me. Never mind.
And by the way, there are attendants who are there to enforce the rules, so, you know, make sure that this doesn't happen.
Precisely. And wonderful time. Actually, it's far too long since I was last out at Royal Ascot, probably about 3 or 4 years, but that's what happens when you have the Linkages show and a whole heap of other goodies going on. It's a bit
and
like...
Headley yesterday, rather great fun.
Well, it's the season in force. Did you manage to touch base face with Liz Brewer, he says, off the record.
I saw her indeed at Lady Colin Campbell's picnic. She turned up in this glorious vehicle because, as you know, she had problems with her foot, and said hello to everyone. In fact, I've got a photograph of us all. So, yes, indeed, I did, albeit fleetingly. She always has a spectacular picnic at Ascot, and
exactly.
She's, you know, one of its great...
It's like a Liz Brewer entourage. It's wonderful. Let's...
On Sky News with Georgie Campbell, talking about the royal finances. I'm not sure, however, that we will have time to...
Not today, no, because at the end of the day, the finances of Buckingham Palace probably pale before the general combined wealth of the citizens of Hampstead. See what we did there.
They do, but the interesting thing with this film is obviously that it's taking an international pitch because Notting Hill was such a success when you look at that.
And you've got Brendan Gleeson in it. Brendan Gleeson and Diane Keaton.
What's not to love? Absolutely. Just my very, very thought when I saw Hampstead, I live on its borders, Hampstead Heath, I can pretty well see from here, actually. I'm looking out of the window at the moment, and I mean, here you've got, as you say, Gleeson and Keaton, and also an area of London which prides itself, as I remember from being editor of International Who's Who, for having a larger number of celebrities of all sorts than any other part of Britain, actually. But the lofty heights of Hampstead, yes, they house the celebrities, but this, it's a romance. It's between an independent free liver who lives in a bit of a shack, Donald, played by Brendan Gleeson, and Diane Keaton plays the uptight Emily Walters, whose life is at a crossroads. She's heavily in debt. He is threatened with eviction, but she sees his shed from her binoculars and sees there's something strange going on, as the council wants the property, and she is in search of love, and you've got her residence association, somebody's trying to set her up with her financier solicitor who sort out all her financial problems. Pretty music, lovely visuals, a couple of first-class performers, and it's a dud. Why? Because the script's so silly. I mean, you've got obvious caricatures of rather twee and precious Hampstead residents. You've got the local colour, maybe. But the point is that Gleeson and Keaton simply aren't given anything convincing to do.
And I gather, Richard, they didn't even offer you a cameo, which is outrageous.
Well, you're quite right now. You really mentioned why I'm against
exactly.
It's a serious matter that I'm only grateful to you for revealing, because Simon Callow got a cameo as a magistrate and did rather well. James Dorton pops up briefly as Philip Emily's son. There's no real drama in this. It's not meaningful. And if you could, looking at the housing crisis in London and the fact that it's part and parcel of why the council want the land, can Donald prove a claim to it? The answer, simply and frankly, is that do we greatly care? It's that soapy. I mean, if Notting Hill, which was a professional, marvellously acted, extremely funny and human a movie, it ain't.
Well, you've convinced me that I made the right decision earlier in the week when I decided to go and see Transformers 5, Legend of the Night, or The Last Night, as opposed to Hampstead. I was willing to go see Hampstead. No, I went to Transformers, and I'm thoroughly glad that I did. Surprisingly so, because I really didn't expect to enjoy a Michael Bay movie, but I did. Anyway, that's...
Michael Bay is an acquired taste.
But Michael Bay and Sir Anthony Hopkins, somehow the magic works. That's all I will say at this particular moment in time, because otherwise we'll be saying, are you trying to seduce me?
Indeed, and when I saw The Graduate for the first time, and I've seen it many times in South Africa, the word seduce was removed, so that gives you an idea of how narrow-minded and monstrous censors can be.
What did they replace it with? Was it just a gap in the air, or dare we not ask what they replaced it with?
No point, a gap in the air.
Yeah.
So it's ridiculous, because when the word seduce comes up...
Are you trying to... Me, Mrs. Robinson?
Exactly, yes. Exactly. That's
even
what
worse,
I
even worse. Worse.
It's true, it's ridiculous. Mike Nichols, a sort of prodigy, directed it. I mean, he had such an innings as a director, so sadly no longer with us, but it became a symbol of the freedoms of the 1960s, and I mean, absolutely pivotal, because it appealed to a younger generation. It showed that sex did sell, and also the facts were that the family, which Hollywood had been concentrating on, was becoming a bit more disparate. There was a new, a very, very strong new movement to show a great deal more about of human activity than the cinema was doing. And it's quite extraordinary that apparently, I'm looking at the early statistics of people who went to The Graduate, the vast majority of them were under 30. And it's interesting, the use of music, who could forget Simon Garfunkel? I mean, so many wonderful tunes from it. The visual style of the movie, which is very imaginative, the sexual frankness, and also the content of it linked with Bonnie and Clyde. Moving to Midnight Cowboy, and after that, all the barriers in Hollywood, of course, came down when it came to examining the human condition.
The Hays Code went for a burden, so to speak.
Hays Code was one of the most extraordinarily repressive codes, and it was not held together by any law, but by a general agreement in the studios, and something as ridiculous as two individuals in a bed and one
yes, and one leg on the floor always, which is a very technically a very difficult position to maintain in any kind of routine and room in the house, let alone the bedroom. But never mind, I'm sure.
Embarrassing just to think back how long it lasted, because dating from the 1930s, and they'd been pretty repressive in the 1920s. They were rather shocked at
apart from the Europeans, of course, Richard. Those Europeans, you know.
Mae West quips and Cecil B. DeMille's topless dances. It's that actually caused the code to be set up. Mm. And I mean, we have to pay tribute also to Mike Nichols, to Dustin Hoffman as Benjamin Braddock in the novel. It was the character was a wasp, but to make him Jewish and also make him as gauche as they did. The way, embarrassed by his parents, and finally finding happiness in a tryst with Mrs. Robinson, played by Annie Bancroft so unforgettably. And then, of course, when they do talk, they have much to say to each other. But it's Elaine, Catherine Ross, that really, really causes the most serious difficulties.
And yet somehow I feel she didn't actually manage to reach the heights she'd done in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But then again, that's a different line entirely.
Oh, well, in Butch Cassidy, I agree totally, because that was absolutely sublime. Catherine Ross's role in The Graduate was... It was subsidiary, but of course the end is climactically, it's very interesting.
Of course, you know, the banging on the church, the routine, the whole race.
You didn't see much of that in South Africa, and in Ireland too, I understand, because the use of a crucifix in a certain way was...
You probably got the 10-minute version as opposed to the full 2 hours, but never mind.
Right, you are, but it's wonderful to celebrate, and those who haven't seen it, and a new generation, and some may not have... It's in cinemas now, and please catch it. And also, if you're interested in cinema history, it helped to break down taboos that should never have been there.
We'll make sure Tessa Snart sees it, and some of the other Midwick Drivettes as well,
and
if
also,
they haven't seen it.
Just to pay tribute to Mike Nichols, who was remarkable, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Closer, Charlie Wilson's War. Oh, yes.
And Working Girl. Don't forget Working Girl with Carly Simon and a whole range of other things in the latter in the 80s, I believe.
A very, very distinguished director. And he produced The Graduate shortly after he left college, apparently. So...
That's the Ace Director, that was Mike Nichols. We've covered Royal Ascot, The Graduate and Hamsters, not necessarily in that order. You can always listen again to the podcast. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Yes, I have most indeed.
Are you back with us again next week?
I look forward to it. And having off tomorrow to Berlin, which will be exciting.
Ausgezeichnet, mein Herr. Ausgezeichnet.
Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret, just the Robinson's affair. Most of all, you have to hide it from the kids. Coo-coo-ca-choo, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Sitting on a sofa on a Sunday afternoon, going to the candidates' debate. When you've got to choose, every way you look at it, you lose. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? A nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Ooh, what's that you say, Mrs. Robinson? Joe to Joe has left and gone away.
So Noel's saying that one doesn't have anything to fear except fear itself, but it seems that a third of British folk have actually changed travel plans due to the threat of terrorism. Now, to address this from the perspective of providing advice and indeed providing some insight into the whole thing, we're delighted to be able to welcome travel expert Paul Nelson from World Travel Market, who of course conducted this research. Paul, how are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad at all. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, in terms of this, your research from World Travel Market, 35% of Brits have changed their travel plans due to the threat of terrorism. On one hand, you can say, well, that means a lot more staycations, but at the same time, are they right to do so?
I think it's all subjective, isn't it? And it's down to the individual. I think, yes, you're right, there will be an increase in staycations, but also you're seeing people moving to what will be perceived as a more safer destination, so Spain, Portugal, etc., and moving away from those countries that have been really popular from a tourism perspective over the last few years, such as Turkey because of obviously the coup last year and terrorism concerns, Egypt, Tunisia, obviously we all know what happened there a couple of years ago. So people will be staying in the UK a little bit, but at the same time, you know, we all love our summer holiday abroad, so I think you'll find that in many ways it's just people moving from those destinations that they're slightly unsure about to the more perceived safer destinations, the traditional European hotspots that we've been going to for decades and decades.
In some ways, we've almost got a perfect storm here, because on the one hand, you've got Brexit and all the financial challenges and questions with respect to that. Then you've got clearly the whole notion of fundamentalist movements across the world. Is it a case of, as I said at the top of the piece, we are concerned about that fear factor, and ultimately you have to sometimes say, okay, calculate the risk, see how things are going, take your advice. Obviously, we're not going to recommend that people just simply dive into the whole system, but if, for instance, you want to travel to Far East, to Asia, to South Korea, let's say, is it a case of, okay, let's just sort of go with this?
I think in general Brits are very resilient as far as travel is concerned. I mean, certainly down here in London, you only have to look at the weather we've had over the last couple of days, and I think it's the same all around the country as a key reason as to why we want to get away and take in some sun and experience different cultures and creeds and etc. People will travel. We will travel. We will continue to travel. What we need to do is probably spend more time looking at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office's website, which is pretty much the Bible as far as all information is concerned, regardless of terrorism threats, but also just what, where resorts are, what's safe to do in resort, what not to do in resort, you know, if there's issue with pickpocketing, etc. So regardless of, even if you're going to what would be perceived as a safer destination, everyone should still, and I would definitely recommend for them to, you know, check that Foreign and Commonwealth Office website just to get the complete lowdown on the resort they're going to.
Tourism's clearly about more than just Brit folk going abroad. We have Europeans and people from other nationalities coming to Britain as well. Is there a similar vibe that the number of tourists coming to the UK? I mean, we've already mentioned we've had some very challenging tales ourselves recently with obviously Manchester, London and so on. Has that kind of impacted, or is it likely to impact visitors coming to the country?
At the moment, it's unclear, if I'm being honest. There's, where there's been terrorist attacks in other countries, some countries have seen a drop-off of up to 30%. However, London in the UK is seen as a dual destination around the UK, so around the world. So it's a very popular place to go. You know, it's very iconic. The numbers have just increased dramatically since the Olympics in 2012. And the one benefit of Brexit, as far as inbound tourism is concerned, is that because the pound is now a lot weaker than it was a year or so ago, it makes it very cheap for people, say, from Europe or from the US to come over. So we've actually seen a big spike post the Brexit vote and since the weakening of the pound of overseas tourists coming over. And to be honest, because of that, because I don't really see that changing.
And in terms of the key hotspots, no pun intended, some people might want to say, I want to go to the Arctic Circle or the Antarctic, not necessarily a hotspot there, but in terms of where people are actually going to seek the sun and so on, are they the traditional external factors there, or are there any newbies that are coming on the scene?
They will be this summer pretty much the traditional hotspots. So as I said, they'll be going to Spain and the Spanish Islands, and they'll be going to Portugal. Personally, I'm off to Croatia next week, which is a favourite of mine. And there's a country that's seen its numbers increase quite a bit over the last few years, particularly since it joined the EU. But on the main, it will be those traditional hotspots because of the issues with Brexit, but also because of the terrorism concerns.
And you mentioned one site that people can actually go to find out further information. If people are listening to this and they're concerned about, you know, making sure they do their research and sort through those sort of factors, where would you recommend?
Yeah, so just go to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office's website, and there you'll be able to do all the research that that you need to do on wherever destinations you want to go to, and that can help you choose which destination you ultimately decide upon.
Makes perfect sense. Paul, it's been a delight sharing some thoughts with you, good self. I'm sure the more information that will come through as far as the world travel market is actually concerned. Just off the record, what about space tourism? I mean, that's often put forward as the next step forward. Richard Branson and company, do you feel there's any likelihood that we'll be in, I don't know, a couple of decades' time saying, yeah, actually, I quite fancy going to the moon?
I'm not too sure if it's likely that you or I will be going to the moon in the next couple of decades, but it wouldn't surprise me if... it is possible within the next couple of decades. You'd mentioned Richard Branson and Virgin, but there are numerous companies all around the world testing this and you know, trying to be the first. Ultimately, it's almost a second space race in many ways. So it wouldn't surprise me if it is a possibility, certainly within our lifetimes.
Clearly, Paul, you need to obviously look to have the branding not world's travel market, but out of this world travel market. On board, Paul. It's been fantastic touching base with yourself today with some fascinating information. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you very much.
I remember to this day the bright red Georgia clay, how it stuck to the tires after the summer rain. Will power made that old cargo, a woman's mind told me that so. Oh, how I wish we were back on the road again. You and a dog named
So it's official. If you're in Newcastle, you're more likely to actually have a dog than a cat, it would seem. Well, Ian Lennox obviously has two cats, so he's making up for them. But to address the whole notion of cats, dogs, pets in general, we're delighted to be able to welcome Renaissance woman extraordinaire. She is the best presenter anyone could ever wish for. It's Michaela Strachan. How are you, Michaela?
Gosh, that's a nice introduction. I like that.
Well, it's only right. And indeed, from the delightful Sainsbury's Bank, where he looks after pet insurance, there, the wonderful Tom Thompson. How are you, Tom?
I'm very good, Alex.
Marvellous.
Nice to talk to you.
Now, I suspect that Ace producer Rachel has already said that her dachshund has actually sort of just taken over her entire life, which is important. It's the way forward. But this thing about pets and all sorts of other animals, etc. Michaela, this particular survey, obviously conducted via Sainsbury's, any real surprises?
I don't think so. I mean, on the whole, the country seems to prefer dogs, and more people have dogs than cats. Although that could be quite surprising. In fact, it was quite close, because I think a lot of people's lifestyle suits having a cat better. And if you work long hours, I don't think it's fair to have a dog that's inside, locked inside all day. So I think, you know, a lot of people, it suit a cat better. But I've got to be honest, I'm a dog person. I've got both. I've got a dog and a cat, and my cat is very independent, very manipulative, only likes me when I'm feeding it, whereas my dog just loves me all the time and gives me such an amazing welcome every time I come home. And I get a lot back from my dog, whereas my cat is a little bit of a, it's like a teenager. It's just a taker, just takes all the time, doesn't give.
An interesting point. I mean, obviously, we're looking primarily at cats and dogs from that perspective. Do you think this applies to other pets as well? I mean, hamsters, giant lizards, for instance, all those kind of areas?
Do you know, I think a hamster and a giant lizard, again, they don't give a huge amount back, do they? I had a hamster when I was a kid, and I used to get it out the cage when I was doing my homework, and it used to chew all the carpet and the bedclothes and everything as it ran around trying to get under the floorboards, as they do. And I adored that hamster at the time. But I think, I mean, personally, I just think dogs give so much back. And the fact that they make you go out all the time because you have to walk them. You know, there are so many benefits from having a dog. But yeah, I would definitely say if you have a lifestyle that you can have a dog, then it's a brilliant thing to have. And, you know, I've got an only child. My son is 12 years old. It's the best thing for him. You know, they are such good friends, and they give each other such a lot of company.
A boy and his dog, a whole range of aspects.
Yeah.
Tom, returning to yourself briefly, I mean, I can see possibly a campaign here for having certain parts of Sainsbury's stores set aside as petting zoos, really, from that point of view. I mean, is that a way forward?
That's an interesting concept, and we are always looking to bring other things to the stores. We do have a pet aisle, of course, but at the moment there's no animals
in
there.
Well, exactly, you see. I mean, the ultimate consumers, they're not allowed to actually sort of participate in the particular pet aisle. Did any of the survey findings surprise yourself, Tom? I mean, I was interested to find that the most popular names for dogs are Max, Jack, Poppy, Charlie and Alfie. So it seems that Brutus and Rex have actually gone down the tubes.
Yes, and if you look at cats, you've got Poppy, Daisy, Molly, Lucy, Alfie. And the thing you'll notice about them is that they're all also human names. And I think that, you know, that really resonated. You know, the findings coming out of the research suggested that, you know, the animals were very much part of the family, and actually naming them with human names, I think, was a good indicator of that.
Yes, you don't really want to go down the line of Zorg or Alpha Beta 1. Well, I suppose you could. It's 21st century. Michaela, back with yourself. I mean, in terms of the geographical breakdown here, I mean, we mentioned about Newcastle. 2 in 5 households in Newcastle own a dog, whereas Brighton actually apparently is lowest in terms of dog owning scenarios. Norwich had the most cat owning households. I'm not sure whether we can draw any particular parallels between this and our general routine and independent. But any thoughts?
It was quite interesting how the different areas vary. I mean, your area is 40%, 49% prefer dogs compared to 30% who prefer cats. And that's quite normal, those statistics. Whereas other statistics, I mean, if we go to Newcastle, 58% prefer dogs, 14% prefer cats. So that's quite low. But, you know, these aren't conclusive, these results.
they're
very general.
Exactly, they're surveys.
But as I say, on the whole, I think people do prefer dogs to cats.
Certainly seems to be the overall line of things. Maybe it's because in Lincolnshire, of course, the dogs are actually allowed to accompany their owners to the Lincolnshire show, whereas other showgrounds, they say, no dogs allowed whatsoever. So maybe it's a more sort of canine-friendly area. Finally, in terms of, obviously, the reciprocation, I mean, I often think, Michaela, that really pets choose us as much as we choose them. Is there something in terms of that? Because there's always the line about somehow our pets can end up looking like us. I mean, I've seen lots of exhibitors at dog shows and cat shows. We think, actually, yes, there is a resemblance.
That is so true. It's so funny, isn't it? I mean, my dog is a rescue dog. She's a puppy, and she's very scruffy. What does that say? Does that say that I'm very scruffy?
highly intellectual, sorted through, and lots of energy. The more energy you put into something, the more chaos you cause. It's the second law of thermodynamics, Michaela.
She does have a lot of energy. Whereas my cat, as I say, my cat definitely chose us. It lived down the road with four other cats, didn't like one of the cats. It kept coming to our house. We couldn't get rid of it. We kept giving it back to the owners, and it kept turning up again. And eventually,
call
as
it
I say,
boomerang. Call it boomerang.
We actually called it Gypsy.
Oh, there we are.
So that cat definitely decided to live with us. And I've heard that a lot with cats. I think dogs are slightly different because you have more control of a dog. So a dog has its boundaries, whereas a cat just does what it likes. So my dog looks like me and has the same energy levels as me, and my cat chose me.
And do your pets actually have their own Twitter accounts, Michaela? Because that's the next stage further forward. I found that cats and dogs often they're exploding onto social media as well.
No, my cat and dog don't have
stepped away from that.
Twitter accounts.
Way forward. Tom, I need to ask you the question. Do you have any pets yourself?
Well, you won't actually believe this. I'm actually allergic to both cats and dogs.
I had a sense that might be the case. Yeah. But it just shows that you're making the ultimate sacrifice to be head of pet insurance.
Absolutely.
To actually work through that process. Where's the best place to go to find out further information? Because clearly we've talked about, obviously, the love and the joy that our canine and feline friends can actually bring to us. But at the same time, it's important that you can actually insure them, because there are moments where sometimes issues can occur. So where can people find out more about pet insurance from Sainsbury's?
Yeah, so the place to go is sainsburysbank.co.uk, and you can follow the links for pet insurance there. And it really is important to look at the different products out there in the market.
And if Rachel hasn't shown you her sausage dog or her dachshund, then I sincerely hope that she does before the end of the day, at least a photograph, because if you can get through that without going, and I say this to both yourself, Michaela, and Tom, without going, I'll be amazed.
Well, Alex, you ask about a Twitter account. I've actually just posted a picture of me and the little doggy on my Twitter account.
Which presumably is at Michaela Stracker.
It's at Michaela Stracker, without the N,
there
wasn't enough digits to be able to have the N.
Very important. Michaela and Tom, it's been fantastic touching base with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting and okay telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been great.
Yeah, it's been
a good chat. Thank you very much.
Well, hopefully we can connect with you again in the not-too-distant future and continue the sort of canine, feline, cat-dog scenario. It's good to know that we get on well together at the end of the day, so that's the important thing. Will you both return?
Definitely.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having us on, Alex.
In Newcastle, 58% of people prefer dogs. Only 14% prefer cats. Ian, why are you bucking the trend? Ian Lennox, to share with us on that line. I mean, there are so many kind of systems there that sort of open up the next discussion. I just don't know where to start. I mean, have you always been somebody who's bucked the trend, Ian Lennox?
I'm a natural outsider, Alex.
And what about that line, a dog has its boundaries, a cat does what it wants?
As generalisations go, it's pretty much true, I think. Dogs grew up with us, I think, to hunt with us, didn't they? And over the years. And dogs are more intelligent than cats, in the sense that they can receive more information. And,
You're not shying away from controversy. I mean, if Ollie and Obo are actually listening to you say that dogs are more intelligent than cats, you realise you could actually have a feline revolution on your hands.
Cats just do what they want anyway. The reason I prefer cats is they don't take all that much looking after. And we're sort of, we're bound by mutual selfishness, I think. And I don't have to take it for a walk every night and that sort of stuff.
You could, of course, if you were...
They fit in better with my pattern of life than dogs.
If you were French, you could, of course, take it for a walk on a regular basis. I believe it was one...
Cats don't like that.
Are you sure? Well,
Or maybe they just like to go.
Maybe, I don't know. I think they go from wandering on their own in the dustbins and things, don't they?
And obviously, Ollie and Oboe, sadly, not in the top five names. They're top five names for cats: Poppy, Daisy, Molly, Smudge, and Lucy.
Well, I'm glad about that then.
Moving on, I realise that clearly you might sort of say, why are we talking about cats and dogs, etc.? Is it like Newcastle United supporters and Sunderland supporters? No, but it seems that all is not well with respect to Chinese takeovers and a variety of other bits and pieces. Already, Rob Lee has come out this week and said it could be another season of stress and strife because it seems as though Michael Ashley and Mr. Charnley are possibly going back on their words. Are you worried, Ian? Or is it just a case of no, situation normal? Hey.
Well, I've learned over the years, it's all Newcastle United and any other football team, I suppose, is just to ignore things that appear in news. I mean, Newcastle have now been linked in the last 2 months with over 100 players.
Yes.
They've signed one who's already in the team anyway, they had from, loan from Chelsea.
Yes, that's correct.
So, what's going on? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well.
But, I mean, you read one.
Let's
face it. Well, all the things that go on behind the scenes in football, the agents trying to sell players, they're telling reporters this, that, and the other, hoping to get that player in the press, it's in the public eye, they want to go so and so. The whole thing is.
At least there's one thing, Ian, we can always guarantee that when it comes to Championship and World Championship matches, international wise, England will always lose on penalties to Germany. That's the fact.
Do you see the game?
Well, you know.
They were extraordinarily lucky to get the penalties. Some they were lucky to get the extra time. They were lucky to get the half time, that's all. I mean, they're just a very, very ordinary side. And I think most of those players will not go. I mean, was it when Germany won the European Championship sort of 4 years ago?
Yes.
Six of their players went on to play in the national team.
Yeah.
Well, we've got players in the national team who qualify with the under 21s, we don't bother to play them. So none of their players get experience of tournaments. As they should do, most of those players I saw them over two games. I've got more chance of playing in the Championship than I've got playing for England.
Once again, the words of Ian Lennox. You might think they're harsh, but that's what you get when you have a man from Newcastle venting at this time of the day on a Thursday. And quite rightly so, too. Tessa Snart did email in, and we will pass on to Michaela Strachan. She could do it herself via our Twitter account, of course. The fact that it was Michaela Strachan who inspired her to go into school as a wildlife conservationist. Strange. After watching all the animal shows, including The Really Wild Show and Country File in year 7, when Tessa was at school, asked to dress up as to what she wanted to be when she was older. Michaela still inspires Tessa to become a television presenter and has been a very big influence growing up. It kind of does your heart good to actually know that that sort of word has been spread across the whole base, really. You find a midweek driver who's been inspired by Michaela Strachan. Splendid, splendid news. Ian, I do want to spend some time talking about your latest opus, and I will do. But not today, because it's...
It's not really worth talking about at the moment, because it's still open to so much change, really. But it is going... I am feeling quite reasonably pleased with it.
And so you should, sir. So you should. You know, in the words of Ellie Sample a couple of weeks ago, it leaves you wanting more, which is always good. That's just the first chapter. Actually, it wasn't Ellie Sample, it was Professor Fiona Moore, who's actually keen on addressing that. In the second part of the production, a couple of questions for your good self. Have you always been able to boil an egg, Ian?
Have I always been able to boil an egg?
Indeed, yes.
I don't know, really. I've got a thing you just put into a machine and prick the top and it comes out as an egg, a boiled egg. It takes all the skill out of it, I suppose.
But
you're talking about putting in a pan of boiling water, aren't you?
Precisely.
It's pretty... Providing you're willing to sort of time it properly.
33%.
I can't see what can go wrong,
33% of millennials admit that they're unable to boil an egg, and 25% of women surveyed recently don't know how to make pancakes. This is the shocking fact.
Really?
Of course,
you can buy pancakes ready made, can't you? Now?
Well, that's very true. And also.
Put a microwave for 30 seconds and put some treacle on it, that's it.
When you were a lad, not too many years ago, Ian, indeed when you were a parent, also, you know, in view of that, that still are, of course. Wearing a school uniform, did you think it helped prevent bullying, or were you not a school uniform person?
We had to wear school uniforms at my school, yes.
And did it
both of them.
Did it help to prevent
bullying? No, it didn't. I was lucky, Alex. I lived in a very pleasant area.
Well, of course.
And there wasn't very much bullying at the schools I went to. And also, I was very good at games as a young lad. Mm. So that sort of took that sort of thing away from me anyway.
Right.
So I don't know. I remember at one of my schools, I was there was one lad who was a bit of a bully, but we went to school. It was a private school, and he was a tradesman's son, and all the other lads were sort of sons of surgeons and people like that. And they were horrible to me, some of them, and not surprisingly, he became quite aggressive towards them, and I got to like him a lot. He's a decent lad in many ways, and I sort of stuck up for him, really.
Well, on that note, Ian, I have to ask you the question. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Short but sweet, yes.
It has, actually. But, you know, there's so much to be packed. We've got Sarah Bullimore to
talk
about.
No, that's quite interesting. The cats and dogs thing we're
listening to. Well, you know, we'd like to provide a certain smidgen of interest on the whole system. I thought that we would have been bonding on a whole range of other bits and pieces. So can we provide...
Well, she's a very engaging lady, and she also knew what she talked about. So.
Well, those are the majority of our guests, of course, Ian. If you're not engaging and know what you're talking about...
I can't myself. It's an honourable exception.
Exactly. No, not at all. We wouldn't ask you those last two questions. Or will you be back with us next week?
I hope so, yes. Yes.
Excellent. Well, in the next part, you see, I haven't even had a chance to play a piece of music for you to actually put through the loudspeakers to send the cats away.
Please don't feel guilty about that, Alex.
That's okay. Is it raining in Newcastle, by the way?
Oh, it's, yes. Mm-hmm. The roof is... I've had the roof in three times this year, and as soon as it starts to rain heavily, which it has been doing, it rained for about 24 hours up here, I immediately go to the small toilet to see if there's anything coming in, and that's it. Anyway, my house at the moment is leak-proof. I know I'm tempting fate by saying it.
That was exactly, that was just classic stuff. Ian Lennox will return, the news coming up for the Sky News Centre, and then more magic with Sarah Bullimore.